A glider collides with its tow plane over California. The NTSB says a crashed albatross had only 3 hours on its overhauled engines in 20 months. And a stricken truck driver destroys two Cessnas. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, December 1st, 2009. We're saddened to report that a glider and its tow plane collided in midair over the Crazy Creek Glider Port near Middletown in Northern California on Saturday, killing both pilots. Initial accident reports suggest a couple of obvious links in the accident chain. The sailplane, a Schleicher ASW-27, was inbound on right base. The Piper PA-25 tow plane was inbound on left base. The Piper was not equipped with a radio. Weather at the time was reported to feature wind gusts in excess of 30 knots. The investigation continues. The National Transportation Safety Board has issued a preliminary report on the crash of a Grumman G-111 Albatross on November 5th in Fort Pierce, Florida. The plane was substantially damaged and leaked as much as 150 gallons of fuel, but there was no post-crash fire and there were only minor injuries to one crew member. The board has determined so far that the plane was on a special permit issued the day of the crash to fly from Fort Pierce to Okeechobee. The two Curtiss-Wright engines had undergone overhauls 21 months earlier, but had been flown very little since then, accumulating only 3.1 hours of flight time by October 12th of this year. Takeoff weight was about 27,000 pounds against a max gross of 30,605. The pilot and a witness both reported that the left engine made repeated popping sounds before failing after the gear and flaps had been retracted. The pilot, an ATP with almost 10,000 hours, couldn't get the ball centered on one engine and attempted an emergency landing on an airport access road. A final report on probable cause is likely about a year away. The driver of a pickup truck reportedly passed out while driving and crashed through the airport fence at Gillespie Field in El Cajon, California last Wednesday, destroying two Cessna 152s and slightly damaging a third. Neither the driver of the truck, who was not named, nor his chocolate lab retriever, who was riding with him at the time, was injured. The LA Times cites police sources who say the man apparently fainted while driving and crashed through the airport fence near the Golden State Flying Club. When he came to, his truck was underneath one of the planes. Police say no drugs or alcohol appear to be involved. The cause of the accident is still under investigation. Up next on ANN, Northrop Grumman's Global Hawk gets a military airworthiness certificate. Embraer sells more E-jets to a European airline. And Boeing delivers the first two 737 Wedgetails to Australia. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 1st. I'm Paul Plack. Northrop Grumman says the U.S. Air Force has granted the RQ-4 Global Hawk high-altitude, long-endurance unmanned aircraft system a military airworthiness certification. The company calls it a significant milestone in the life of the aircraft system and also a step on the path to routine unmanned flight within the United States. In granting the certification, the service is acknowledging the aircraft's ability to routinely fly safely within design parameters. The certification process evaluated more than 600 airworthiness criteria. Northrop VP George Guerra notes, quote, "With this historic accomplishment and more than 35,000 total flight hours, most of that time in combat support over the skies of Iraq and Afghanistan, Global Hawk continues to be a trailblazer in UAS certifications and a pathfinder supporting our men and women overseas in combat," unquote. The Air Force has awarded Northrop a $303 million fixed-price incentive fee contract for five of the RQ-4 systems. Under the contract, the company will build two Block 30 systems and three Block 40 systems for the 303rd Aeronautical Systems Group at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. The award also includes a ground station. The contract runs through 2011. Austria's second-largest airline, Niki Luftfahrt, has signed a contract for another two Embraer 190 jets, confirming options in its original 2008 contract. The initial delivery of this new order should take place during the first half of 2011. Embraer VP Mauro Kern calls the orders an honor. Quote, "We are very pleased to see our E-Jets helping Nike in the innovative and stringent low-cost environment," unquote. Nike has become the first European low-cost carrier to combine the 112-seat Embraer 190, configured for mid-density routes, with conventional 150 to 210-seat narrow-body aircraft optimized for high-density routes. Airline founder and president Niki Lauda says the E-190, quote, "fits extremely well into our growth strategy and will help us to be profitable in 2009 for the fifth consecutive year. Thanks to the Embraer 190, combined with our narrow-body fleet, we can enjoy the benefits of wider market coverage and develop greater business opportunities while offering the same level of comfort to our passengers," unquote. During a ceremony at RAAF base Williamtown, Boeing has delivered the first two Project Wedgetail 737 Airborne Early Warning and Control aircraft to the Royal Australian Air Force. Delivery of the two planes and utilization of an operational flight trainer provided by Boeing allow the service to begin familiarization training for flight, mission, and maintenance crews. Three additional aircraft are to be delivered to the RAAF by the end of next year. Maureen Doherty, Boeing's VP of the Airborne Early Warning and Control Program, calls the plane the most capable, electronically scanned air surveillance radar and battle management system in the world. Quote, "The worldwide surveillance marketplace has taken notice of Wedgetail's progress, and we're working with several customers to define their future requirements," unquote. The plane is based on the 737-700 airliner, but houses 10 control consoles, which allow the crew to track airborne and maritime targets simultaneously. The crew can direct offensive and defensive forces while maintaining continuous surveillance of the operational area. Boeing says Turkey and the Republic of Korea are also on the waiting list. Still ahead, the FAA is accused of gross mismanagement and endangering the public. The Spitzer Space Telescope has helped solve the brown dwarf mystery. And Yves Rossi's New Year's resolution is probably more daring than yours. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, December 1st. I'm Paul Plagg. The Federal Office of Special Counsel has sent a letter to White House Counsel Gregory Craig accusing the FAA of gross mismanagement and a substantial and specific danger to public safety for landing procedures still in place at Newark Airport. The November 19th letter is the result of a whistleblower complaint filed by an air traffic controller last year, describing procedures that allow airplanes to land on intersecting runways. The controller, Raymond Adams, said that allowing simultaneous approaches to the runways causes serious incursions and risks mid-air collisions. The Philadelphia Inquirer reports that the DOT Inspector General agreed and that the FAA reported 10 days later that it had instituted changes in the procedures when apparently it has not. Associate Special Counsel William Roykoff wrote, quote, "The procedures have not been implemented and FAA has not completed critical steps that FAA represented it had accomplished," unquote. Among the changes proposed by the FAA were to have controllers on Long Island stagger arrivals into Newark and to use software at Newark and Long Island called CRDA, or Converging Runway Display Aid. Adams, the controller, said CRDA was discontinued after being in use for a short time. FAA spokesman Jim Peters said last week, quote, "FAA safety officers wanted to make absolutely sure employees were fully trained on the equipment and parameters and go-around procedures were in place before CRDA was used regularly," unquote. NASA says its Spitzer Space Telescope has contributed to the discovery of the youngest brown dwarf ever observed, a finding that, if confirmed, may solve an astronomical mystery. Brown dwarfs are too large and warm to be considered planets, and too small and cool to be considered stars. Scientists have struggled to explain whether their formation process is closer to that of planets or stars. Dwarfs are thought to be failed stars, meaning they never achieved the mass necessary to produce the internal pressures necessary to produce the internal temperatures necessary to begin the fusion of hydrogen into helium. That's what powers our sun. Before the Spitzer telescope ran out of the coolant needed to obtain maximum sensitivity for its long wavelength infrared camera back in May, it was used to peer into a dark cloud near the Taurus-Auriga complex, where, mission managers say, it helped find two so-called proto-brown dwarfs in collaboration with sophisticated Earth-based observatories. Spitzer has gone on to what is called its WARM mission, still useful to scientists but less sensitive than it was before the coolant ran out. After a year of observation, scientists have concluded that brown dwarfs have a formative spectral signature like that of small, low-mass stars, not planets. David Barrado of the Centro de Astrobiología in Madrid, Spain, who wrote up the findings for the journal Astronomy and Astrophysics, called the discovery difficult but fun. Quote, "Sometimes nature takes its time to give up its secrets," unquote. And finally today, have you made any plans yet for 2010? Any New Year's resolutions? 50-year-old inventor and adventurer Yves Rossi was forced to ditch in the Atlantic Ocean during an attempt last week to cross the Straits of Gibraltar using his jet-powered wing. Rossi said clouds and weather caused him to abort the attempt. The Times of London reports that Rossi attempted to fly 24 miles from Tangier in Morocco to Atlantera in southern Spain at a speed of almost 140 miles an hour. He launched from an aircraft in flight, deployed his jet wing, and headed toward Spain. The carbon fiber wing has a span of about 8 feet, is powered by 4 jet engines, and steered by the pilot's body movements. Rossi told reporters after the attempt that his wing is not easy to fly, and the clouds added to the difficulties. While traveling at speeds between 155 and 185 miles per hour at 2,700 feet, he said he found himself descending toward the water. He jettisoned the wing and deployed his parachute. Spanish Coast Guard vessels were expected to recover the wing. Rossi made history in 2008 by flying the wing across the English Channel from France to England. He's not discouraged over last week's setback. Quote, "Nothing worthwhile has ever been achieved on the first attempt. One tries and tries again," unquote. His next try will be next year. I'd say the bar for New Year's resolutions has been raised. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation discusses a recent audit which finds the Transportation Security Administration is ineffective at choosing technology, and why it's a concern as TSA prepares to take over security of FAA-licensed aircraft repair facilities. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.